This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Yeah, Frank here, he's got his own billiard room.
Yes, it's the...
billiard room.
Come on already. We call it the...
The Place to Be.
Yes, the Place to Be. The Place to Be.
Then I shall be there.
Now, it's time. Live and in living color.
The Grandy Man can.
Time to play the game!
No, you left me satisfied and smiling.
That's what she said!
Why do I want this? I want to make bank, bro. I want to get ass. I want to drive a Range Rover.
Place to Be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be podcast.
Very nice, Mr. Criscola.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dennis.
Japanese band Oral Vampire produced a song called The Repo Man and used footage.
Oral Vampire, huh?
Or Aural. A-U-R-A-L. What
kind of show is this? Sounds like some Twilight porn in Michael Vincent's collection there.
Oz went on to star in American Pie, of course. So we're from Bismarck. No, was it? Bismarck was on
there? Bismarck.
Bismarck. No, who's the other guy I'm getting confused with?
Bismarck. Yeah, he dressed as North Dakota.
There's only one place where the big boys play, and that is in my extra queen-size bed. Well, it just happens. What can you do?
Let's talk the fix.
I think they might hit shock wall.
Is that the shock master's wall?
Yeah, I like big dick myself. I'm just curious. PTB Nation, let me know what
you're
doing.
Our opener.
To do worse than Josh Richard.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to the great episode of the one and only Place to Be podcast. I am your co-host, Justin Rosero, coming at you live here on this Monday evening. Americana is in the air. The World Cup, the USA defeated Ghana 2-1 to go to 1-0 in match pool play. So hopefully they will stay hot. We saw Germany blow out Portugal. So what we need here next up is the U.S. to at least tie or win, obviously, would be key against Portugal, and hope Germany blows out Ghana and locks up their spot, and then the U.S. stays close to Germany. That would be the key. They can get in with a tiebreaker there. So this is your One World Cup update. If you want more, check out the Sports Lounge. Jeff Machado, our resident soccer expert, did a whole World Cup preview on this last episode. So tune over there if you are a soccer fan, which I'm sure we have a lot of, because a lot of international listeners here at the Place to Be. And one of our domestic listeners and, of course, co-hosts is Scott Criscola. Scott, how you doing?
Good evening, JR. Good evening, Place to Be Nation. Welcome to episode 317.
The Bud Light of P2B Nation.
Yes. Welcome to 317 of the Place to Be podcast. And, yes, the U.S. won today. And everybody, you know, everybody has, like, a second team. Like, you obviously, everyone here, we root for the U.S., and then we root for whatever our nationality is, Germany or what have you, or England or whatever. And, of course, you and I. Viva Italia. And they, of course, they got a huge win on Saturday night. They beat, they upset England 2-1. So they're in it too. So I always keep track of them. And then obviously I hop on them when we get knocked out. But let's hope that doesn't happen. I like our team.
Looking forward
this year
to wearing my Italia jersey at St. Mary's Day like I do every year. But hopefully it'll have some meaning behind it this year.
Absolutely. Of course. Of course. How was your weekend? I was a little busy, yesterday.
Yeah, very busy. We had the christening for my new godson, my nephew, Baby D, and so that was a good day, and go home last night, started cutting the grass, my lawnmower died halfway through, which was a pain in the ass, so my dad's taking that over to his neighbor to fix.
Make sure you get a new one by St. Mary's.
Or I know, right? Well, hopefully before that, so we live in the jungle.
Yeah, yes.
Today, Scott, I finally went, I feel like I have to update this, because the world of Place to Be knows all of my allergy issues. Obviously, you hear it each and every episode.
It's like the Raw general manager storyline of the Place to Be.
Never ending. I outlasted the network as far as my allergy issues.
Yes.
So I went to have an allergy test, and my arm looks like you compared it to Randy Orton at Backlash 04, just ravaged by poke holes. And apparently I'm allergic to pretty much everything that's out there, Scott. So here's the list. Dust mites, cats, dogs, cockroaches, mold, pollens, trees, pine, grass, ragweed. Hang on, we got something else here. Looks like chlamydia. No, it's Cenophodium, cocklebur. Something you find in the home
you're
of Derek
to John
Maru.
Cena,
yes, and English something or other. So, those are all the things I need inhalants that will irritate my sinuses.
Oh God, you're not gonna be like one of those ones that walks around with a. Oh, I hope that doesn't get to that point. You have to walk around one of those asthma things, right?
No, I don't think so. Oh, she just said, no, I don't have asthma. I mean, I have pretty good cardio.
No, but I mean, one of those things where you have to like take something every few hours and you have
well,
to
Well, no. The most I may have to do if I can't regulate it on my own would be shot weekly shots. I have to get an EpiPen in case I have an allergic reaction. So I'm open.
Please. Please, I don't want St. Mary's. All of a sudden, you can't. Your throat starts closing or something. That'd be terrifying.
Yeah. So hopefully not. I'm hoping I'm gonna try and make some updates here to what I'm eating and what surroundings. So we'll hopefully be able to do this manually without that. So.
All right. Good. Yeah. No. It's a busy weekend, and it's the humidity's finally kicking in. Have you noticed?
Oh yeah. Yeah. We played basketball last week, and I was just drenched. We're playing tomorrow night, and it's supposed to be really humid. So.
Yeah. That's good though. Get a good workout in, sweat some of the winter, start taking the winter spring calories off. So, speaking of calories, there's a lot of them in the big steel box. Still in here. School's out at the end of the week.
Hey,
right?
hey, what is going on here?
I don't expect you in here next week. All right, enough's enough. You don't live here. All right, get Zach Morris's D minus and then go somewhere for the summer. I don't want you here next week. You don't live here. No summer school either. No Miss Bliss. Tonight. Inside, of course, hearing his voice, we are inside the Vintage Vault. In episode 317, we go from JR undisputed to very disputed.
Ms. Bliss! Hang on.
For tonight, there is not one, but two championship matches. The World Heavyweight Title.
This will be one fall. For the world's heavyweight champion,
ladies and gentlemen, we have a new champion.
The winner, the new world heavyweight champion.
A symbol of defiance, an icon of power, resurrected for a new purpose.
You people deserve your own world champion. Exclusive to Raw.
To be given to an assassin.
Your new world champion, Triple H!
The whole damn show.
Rob Van Dam.
Confident in his abilities, poised to play the game, determined to win the gold. Tonight, Triple H must defend his title to earn the illustrious championship handed to him out of corporate spite and accept it with personal grief. The WWE Championship. Soaked in the blood of its previous proprietors. Yet the current and most dominant controller has remained unscathed, ready to eliminate all that stand in his way. A decade of destruction. Teaching pain is a lesson given to those who walk too close to his yard.
Tonight's got nothing to do with business. This is strictly personal.
Tonight, The Undertaker looks to take first blood, but Brock Lesnar seeks to dispose of another legend. On this night, we shall all bear witness to history. Two championship matches, one night. A night where the mighty will rise and the meek shall remain unforgiven.
I'll dig this bitch up from.
I don't know, but that was actually one of the best intros in a while. I don't really got
They really captured everything. They told the whole 4 weeks of Raw.
I know, pretty much.
And then on September 13th.
Yeah. Yes. It was pretty funny. Tonight, inside the Vintage Vault, on the Place to Be podcast, we bring you Unforgiven 2002. Once again, JR, another month of changes.
Oh, yeah.
Or shall we say unchanging, I suppose, in one aspect. Do you still feel we're in that flux state?
Yes and no. Like, I feel like a lot has kind of settled down coming out of SummerSlam, even though there's still a bunch of changes that have happened.
Mm-hmm.
I think because they happened pretty quickly right after SummerSlam, pretty much the next night. And since then, it's been a lot calmer, and I think now we kind of settle into where we're going to be for a while. So I think that
a lot of that madness we've had over the first 6 or 7 months has finally settled to what we have. It took them like 4 months to figure out what the brand extension should be, and I think we're here now.
Right. Yeah, and obviously with the brand extension and then the whole single champion on a show, obviously some things needed to happen, which you heard in the intro. Right. We'll delve more into that in a moment. September 22nd. Actually, do you want to do the Sutton update before we do the...
Why don't we do the arena and the that info, and then we'll get into
all stuff. Okay. September 22nd, 2002. Live from a brand spanking new Staples Center in Los Angeles, California. Easily, JR, our first trip to the City of Angels since March 24th, 1991.
That's crazy.
WrestleMania 7, the last time we were in the City of Angels. As we talked about, maybe the occasional house show, but rarely did WWE go into the Forum, which was the home of the Lakers. They always went to the LA Sports Arena, which was where the Clippers played. But in 1999, the city realized having two buildings is stupid, so they built this. Tell us about this building.
The Staples Center opened October 17th, 1999, built for $375 million. Basketball holds about 19,060 for Clippers games and 18,997 for Laker games. I guess you have more egos that attend the Laker games.
Well, Jack Nicholson wants less people sitting near him. That's
true. Or I guess once Bill Simmons became a Clippers, the ego inflated greatly.
Yes,
there.
Pretty much.
Yes, so 950,000 square feet. Tenants, the Los Angeles Lakers, the Los Angeles Clippers, the Los Angeles Kings all moved in immediately. Your Los Angeles Sparks moved in 2001. The LA Avengers of the AFL played there for 8 years. The LA Defenders of the D-League played there for 4 years. The Pac-12 Men's Conference Basketball Tournament was there for 10 years as well. And no New York Jews, unfortunately.
No New York Jews.
I'm not traveling all the way to California.
I can't deal with the smog.
I can't even go get to Pennsylvania.
I think the new team playing there, JR, I think they played the Staples Center, is the LA Kiss.
Oh, okay.
Which is the new arena football team owned by, obviously, if you couldn't tell, Paul Stanley and Gene Simmons. Yes, exactly. Okay. They're called the LA Kiss, ... on my list. your attendance on this evening, 16,000 even. Your buy rate, 0.57. And your announcers for Raw, way out in the Bowery.
Are the LA Kiss in town?
They are. The guy with the mustache. Probably my favorite Hall & Oates song. That and Maneater.
That's who you are.
How about that for softball? See, you're not totally doped up on multiple injections today.
Okay. I need another shot of pollen over here.
I got the Cena video.
That was my Roger Moore set impression, apparently.
Yes. I got the Cena video.
Make him as hot as possible.
All right. Your announcers, of course, way out in the catacombs for Raw, good old JR, Jim Ross, Jerry the King Lawler, and right at ringside, your SmackDown announcers, Michael Cole and Taz. And as with SummerSlam, and pretty much from here on forward, and we'll just stop saying it here, obviously, the right team does the right matches.
Yes.
All right. Any Heat matches, JR?
Yeah, we had Heat, and then we had a lot of other stuff going on here. So international Heat, we had Goldust defeating Raven, Big Show defeated Johnny Stamboli. Stevie Richards defeated D'Lo Brown, still hanging around. And on Heat's proper, Rey Mysterio defeated Chavo Guerrero. So Rey, not even on his next pay-per-view here after debuting at SummerSlam. All right, here's their champions roll call. The WWE champion, Brock Lesnar, like he was when we last left SummerSlam. However, we have a brand new title, Scott, that we're going to get to, and that is the world title.
Yes.
That is Raw's main belt now, held by your boy, Triple H. Was awarded the title on September 2nd, 2002 in Milwaukee. Well, of course, we'll get to that. That belt had been retired for 162 days. And now back, it is the big gold belt that had been brought over from WCW during the invasion. Intercontinental champion Chris Jericho had defeated Rob Van Dam on the 9902 Raw for the Pepsi Center in Denver. We have our tag team champion, still the Un-Americans. Women's champion, still Molly Holly. Hardcore title had been retired, Scott. The final hardcore match of this run was on August 26, 2002 from MSG. RVD defeated hardcore champion Tommy Dreamer. Now, here's some stats on the hardcore title that you may find interesting. It was active for 1,349 days. That's 3 years, 9 months, 25 days, 199 weeks. 234 hardcore champions in that time. 132 successful defenses on TV or pay-per-view. 10 successful defenses was the max between Rob Van Dam and Steve Blackman. 200-time champion, champion number 200 was Sean Stasiak. Champion 150 was Bubba Ray Dudley. Champion 100 was also Bubba Ray Dudley. Champion 50 was Steve Blackman. 131 different competitors held the title less than 24 hours. Three divas held the hardcore title. Do you know them?
Victoria?
Nope.
I could have sworn she had, but maybe not.
She debuted it. Oh, you mean when she was the hood?
When she was a hoe.
No, I don't know. He doesn't have her here. He has Bobcat, Trish Stratus, and Terry Runnels.
And
is that what you're going to say?
Well, then there was Mighty Molly.
She was she was a hardcore. Steven Sutton, come on. Get it together.
Come on, Steve. Mighty Molly. She had it at WrestleMania 18 when she smacked her boy Hurricane with the with the frying pan.
All right, who has the most title reigns? This is what I believe.
Oh, Raven.
Yes, 27.
Yeah, Raven.
Who had the longest reign?
Oh, Jesus. Foley?
The Big Boss Man at 97 days.
Wow. I was going to say either Foley or Blackman.
First person to win the title of the house show was Kay Quick on February 3rd, 01. All right, we had some transfers between shows. Brock Lesnar went to SmackDown, Crash Holly to SmackDown, Rico to Raw, and The Undertaker to SmackDown as well. William Regal joined the Un-Americans on the September 9th, 02 edition of Raw, which made a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. Kane returned on the 8/26, 02 edition of Raw. We'll get to him in a bit. The night after SummerSlam, Scott, was a SmackDown brand house show. Do you know the importance of that to you?
I do. You know why? Because I'm trying to look for the date right now, but I don't need to. That was the final event at the New Haven Coliseum.
Correct. The main event. I was there. Edge and Rey Mysterio defeated Kurt Angle and Eddie Guerrero.
Great match. Fantastic match. And the crowd was whooping it up. I was there. It was pretty sad. It was a sad day. And it would sit up there decrepit and dilapidated for 5 years. And then my brother and I got up very early on January 20th, 2007. Stood on the Temple Street garage and watched it come tumbling down. It was very sad. But I watched and I counted, thanks to our good friend Graham Cawthon, who I once again want to thank for joining the guys on Main Event last week. On the history of WWE.com. Ready for this, JR? Between 1987 and 2002, I went to 38 house shows.
Jeez.
38 house shows, Raws, anything live, 38. Between house shows and Raws. Because remember, a lot of them when I was in grammar school and high school from 87 to like 93, they were once a month. They were matinees. They were like $8 to sit in the crap seats. It was easy. It was fun. And there were a lot of, the British Bulldog will not be here. That was probably one of the most disappointing. There was a house show, and just one moment quick before we move on. There was a house show in 93, right after WrestleMania 9. And it was one of those matinee, like 1 o'clock. So I spent like, it was like $6 for the way upper deck, which for the Coliseum is almost like ringside. And it was one of those nights where, and I'm sure you've had them, and sure many listeners have had those, you know, Fink would come into the crowd and into the ring and say, the following could not make it to the show tonight. And he'd rip off pretty much every main eventer. No Luger, no Brett, no no Perfect. It was like, what the? The main event, listen to this tag. The main event was Doink and Bigelow.
Oh, Jesus.
Versus
they were teammates?
Savage. Huh?
Doink and Bigelow were teammates?
Yeah. Because two heels. Heel Doink, heel Bigelow.
I know. It's just funny to think that they
did. Yeah, I know. It was weird. It was probably the only two heels left in the building. This was like in May. It's like a month after 9. Doink and Bigelow versus Bushwhacker, Luke, and Savage. It's like the strangest, fucking weirdest thing I ever saw in my life. But I'll never forget that match. It's so memorable. I'll never forget it.
Weird stuff.
Crazy. But then I saw Raws throughout the Attitude Era. I was at the Coliseum when Austin was put up on the symbol before In Your House Rock Bottom. I watched Luna get into a fist fight with a fan. there's the infamous Raw where Austin said he was paging everybody, and you see him walking. You could tell by the very well-known brick on the side of the building, and then he stunned like five guys that night right before the 98 Rumble. There were a lot of memorable moments there. And it was pretty sad. I knew it was happening. The arena, Bridgeport, had been open or was about to. No, it had already been opened. It opened in the fall of 01. So the arena at Harbor Yard in Bridgeport had already been opened, and we kind of knew the writing was on the wall. So, but I was at that house show, and it was very sad. It was a bummer. But very memorable moments. The Fink worked at the Coliseum before he worked for Vince as an usher. So very memorable moment. And I got when I went to the one of those past conventions a couple years ago, actually when I got our voicer and our autograph, JR, we talked momentarily about the Coliseum. He waxed very nostalgic. He got to do that last show. So it was very cool.
Well, this might be our last show if we don't move on. So
all right. Well, anyway, there you go. So that was it. That was the last show in the New Haven Coliseum. No more. We'll start talking more about the arena at Harbor Yard in Bridgeport from here on out. So.
All right, two TV milestones. SmackDown passed 160 episodes, and Ring of Honor debuted on TV. Do you know the name of their first show? Very coincidentally enough. The TV show was entitled High Impact.
Oh, was it? I never knew that. So there you go. I was going to say Death Before Dishonor, but that doesn't start for a while. Yep. High Impact. That is pretty funny.
Okay, let's dive into this. So, like you mentioned, Unforgiven 02... new era for the company, Scott. You can kind of feel back to the two titles, the Undisputed belt already gone. I thought it made sense, but I thought it hurt the value too. But I was definitely willing to give it a shot. I mean, I liked the idea of the floating champion back and forth, but this was going to give some guys, some different guys, a chance to step up and really further separate the brands, which is what they were truly going for. I mean, if you wanted the original spirit of the brand extension, this was it. So, a very jacked card here to put over the new, more separate era as the extension takes hold. We should mention Paul Heyman had begun booking SmackDown. It really opens up a golden era for the brand here that we're going to discuss over the next few months. So, he becomes the main voice there, and Brian Gewirtz and company were the main voices over on Raw. So, very separate feels to the shows, and we'll definitely feel that as we go through them. One little quick personal anecdote from me, Scott. I think we teased it last episode. This was the first pay-per-view new era. I just moved to Connecticut, and I lost some of the engagement pay-per-views. I didn't really have the funds at the time to order them, and it was kind of just me and my wife. I didn't really know too many people when I first moved there, besides Steve Neumeister, and he wasn't really a wrestling fan.
You know he's not, trust me.
But we were actually following TV pretty closely, and that was the most my wife had ever really watched with me. We'd spend a lot of Monday nights with it on. And there was actually a time period when I would work at 9:30 on Monday, so we'd usually watch like the first. I'm sorry, actually Mondays I used to go in at. Shit, I think I went in 11. I forget. Maybe 11 at
overnights
night.
On Cluster One.
I think so. I think it was 11 on Monday. It was either 11 or 10, something like that. So we'd watch like the very beginning, and then I'd head to work and watch the rest of it there. So it's just a different period for me where I was watching TV closely, following on the internet, but a lot of these pay-per-views I didn't see. Other than one that I went to at the end of the year. But there was a grouping here for a while that I didn't see any of these up until, I think, Mania outside of one. So just wasn't really able to do it. So a lot of these I didn't see for the first time until years later. Going back and watch them. So I'm really excited to go through this stretch here on the show.
Yeah, I was working in Bridgeport, and my hours were 2 to 10, so I usually watched it. And I stayed a little late, so I usually watched it at work. But we're getting close to when I... joined the fine company as well. We'll get to that point when we get to early 2003. One thing about the belts before we move on to the matches, the only reason I'm just look, I know, and obviously the this all depends on the tenor with which we steer the conversation. I always thought that the splitting of the belts was just laziness. I feel like the writers didn't want to put the effort into having a floating champion, because it's not easy. It's not easy to have a guy be on both shows, and you have to kind of
come
up with fresh feuds.
I don't know, though. I really think they just wanted to separate. I mean, the whole idea originally was to have WCW and WWF, which would have had two different belts. So I think the idea really was, hey, let's make these things as separate as possible, and they should have their own champions and do their own thing. They shouldn't interact at all. I mean, I think that was the thought process behind it. Zero interaction. And when you get a guy bouncing back and forth, you're going to get that interaction.
Right, right. That is true. But then when we get to the Triple H RVD match, I'm sure we'll get into the beginning of everybody's pissing and moaning. But so we'll get to that when we get there. But so obviously they just called it the World Heavyweight Championship.
Right.
And SmackDown was the WWE Championship. And for the most part, the belts wouldn't move for a few years.
Yep, a few years.
They would stay. They would stay till probably mid-05.
Yep.
So, all right, let's dive in. Our opener is a pretty. I watched the show. Yes. Well, no, because he's gone. His blood is on Brock Lesnar's barrel chest. this was a great match. I watched the show today, and I love this match. Solid eight-man. And he's in it, too. Anybody left? Well, obviously, Kane. Here's your babyface U.S. team. Kane, Booker T, Bubba Ray Dudley, still floating around trying to find something as a babyface. And, of course, Booker T's soulmate. Yes. And they're working very well together.
Apparently he's eating Pringles tonight.
Yes. Yes, or pretzels. And they were calling them the Odd Couple, Booker and Goldust, and we're gaining a big following. Taking on a pretty swank heel team now, JR, of multiple guys. Of course, the Un-Americans. And this is all four of them. You're wondering, mm-hmm. four? We already know about, of course, the tag team champions, Lance Storm and Christian. The third guy is, of course, Test. He lost at SummerSlam to The Undertaker. And a new fourth guy.
Yep.
JR, who was that fourth guy?
William Regal joined on 9-9 Raw, came out and helped Christian and Storm retain their titles against Kane and Bradshaw.
Also, kind of a cool team, huh? Kane and Bradshaw?
Yeah.
Kind of a
we
cool
should also mention
team.
That on the August 26th Raw, the Un-Americans came out and were set to light fire to the American flag in the middle of the ring. The torching was temporarily stopped when Kane's music fired up. Kane didn't appear, but Tess relit the torch, and Booker and Goldust made the save. The numbers were too much, and Booker and Goldust were quickly dispatched of. Just when Jerry Lawler was about to get involved to make the save, Kane came out, making his first appearance since April, when mm-hmm. he tore his bicep. Been on the sidelines since then. Ran off the Un-Americans. Kane was even convinced to do a Kane-a-Rooney with Booker, and the sides would war over the ensuing weeks. Bradshaw had been involved in the American team, but he suffered an injury, and Bubba Ray took his place, getting involved in the fracas the week before the pay-per-view. So I always found it funny that Kane and Bradshaw are supposed to be like the two singles guys getting pushes out of the draft. And Kane got hurt immediately. He comes back. Now Bradshaw's hurt immediately. And yes. Austin's gone. Those are supposed to be like the top three faces there on Raw coming right off the draft. And they're all.
And that great NWO draft pick, yeah.
Right. Yeah, no, right. So
Raw, and the Undertaker draft pick.
The Raw draft not looking so strong.
No.
Even to this day. We should mention as well, this was the match that Chad Campbell did for his previewing mm-hmm. up at PlaceTimination.com. So you can go ahead and check that out. He enjoyed it quite a bit as well. Mm. Gave it a big recommendation to kill some time for 15 minutes.
I thought it was a lot of fun.
Yeah. It was a good choice, I thought, as a hot opener. Kind of harking back to the old school, you know, hot tag formula to open up a show. Kane trying to regain some of that lost momentum. Booker and Goldust still ridiculously over with the fans here. Mm-hmm. I thought it was a perfect fit, like we mentioned, William Regal with the Un-Americans. Really made it a solid group all around, both in the ring and now on the mic, having some good mic guys as well.
Mm-hmm.
Bubba Ray and Goldust did the dual flip-flop and fly, which I enjoyed, the old dusty elbow.
Yep.
Hot start featuring all the wrestlers getting involved to get their spots in. Booker's popularity really at his height right now. I don't think he's ever, and this is, you know, we don't like to get too far ahead on this, but I want to track as we go along if Booker is ever this over again as he is in the fall of 2002.
As a babyface or in general?
As a babyface.
I
don't think he's ever stronger than he is here as a babyface. I mean, he is just like off the charts hot right now. Great Un-Americans teamwork, very smooth unit. They do a long heat segment on Booker. Kane was in great shape, prime for a big run. He's got the new half mask on. He's showing some more personality, talking a bit more. So they're really trying to open him up as a personality. The crowd got really fired up, and Kane would mow through the Un-Americans. Tested a nice pump handle on Kane. Booker was the hottest in the ring, the most over the group, and kind of got the biggest shine as well outside of Kane. Spitaroonie gets a huge pop, too, and Kane gets the win. Very good opener, perfect choice here, I thought.
I agree with you 100%. You had a lot of solid mid-card guys who, and we've been talking about the mid-card, JR, these last few vaults, kind of like some guys are in the right spot, and there's some others that are floating. And I mean, Bubba Ray, they split up a great tag team. Although, admittedly, stale, and we said that a lot at the end of 01 into 02. And they gave D-Von kind of the dopey gimmick on SmackDown, but they gave Bubba Ray, like, you know, we're here to give you a legitimate singles push and see how far we can get you. And it just hasn't happened. He just ends up being in other tag matches. It's, like, really bizarre, you know?
No, I agree. It's for all the guys, like we said, that they planned to push coming off of the split have all kind of just meandered. Never really did much. I mean,
yeah.
I don't think one guy on Raw was really made, maybe Eddie, but he wasn't even there at the original draft. So, yeah, it's been interesting. It's been an interesting run.
Yeah, I agree.
Since
but a great
of guys.
Yeah, but a great match. A lot of fun. I love this Un-American heel team.
Oh, yeah.
They're awesome.
Well,
Regal was
it's,
a perfect
it's
fit
easy
to join.
Heat. You know, it's easy heat.
Yep.
And they're really good. So yep. You're the best of both worlds. Because they can build legitimate heat. They can wrestle. They can get the cheap heat. They're easy to hate. None of the guys has ever really been a beloved face for the company, right? I mean, Storm, Christian.
Nope.
I mean, Christian kind of was with Edge and Christian, but not really ever. Right. And Regal, never really been there. And then you have Taz, who was a face, but not really super over outside of a few months in 99. So easy to hate guys and great on the stick. So it really was a very deep team. I think maybe they got kind of conflated with the whole anti-America thing, and they kind of get lumped in maybe with other, you know, jingoistic acts over the years, but I think even if you took the un-American part away from them, they still would have been a pretty great heel stable. So I agree. I like this unit, and I hope they stay strong for a while here.
Yeah, I do too. They do eat the loss here,
which was fine. This is the match. It's kind of like, well, who cares? So it was a big brawl. Kane was getting a big push, and
yeah,
it's completely believable.
Yeah, good time. Just a scoosh under 10 minutes. So a lot of time. Just a good opener.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of good workers. And I mean, really, both sides, just great workers. It was it was a perfectly booked opener. I mean, not a perfect match. I mean, you know, it's about a 3, 2.5, 3 out of 5. But just good workers and just very exciting to watch. And I have to say, I was really paying attention to the announcing on this show today when I was watching it and / listening to it. And there is some low Jerry Lawler moments, but there's actually some decent Jerry Lawler moments. This match was one of them. They were very hot here, and JR obviously can't stand these guys, you know, old school Midwest patriot American that JR is.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought the announcing in this match was fantastic. Now again, Lawler would get his annoying moments, and we'll get to those later, but it was actually pretty good here, and I actually also enjoyed him in the title match later on. So this was actually not a bad pay-per-view for Lawler. He had a few kind of ones, but this one actually wasn't too bad, and he got off to a good start. This is a good match for not just the crowd and for the guys in the ring, but for the announcers as well. And your baby faces, the guys that needed to get over, get the win. And Kane, were you surprised Kane got the pin? Were you thinking?
No, it was clear. No, it was clear Kane was coming back hot. They had big plans for him, so it made sense for him to get the win here.
Okay. So your baby face team, Kane, Bubba Ray Dudley, Goldust, and Booker T get the victory in a pretty good match. Pretty good 8-man opener.
And then we had backs. Oh, I'm sorry.
Guys. I was going to say my one last thing. I don't think we've had an 8-man tag in a while. No?
Not a pay-per-view.
Yeah, a
or
while.
98. I don't know if we have had one since then.
I mean, we had the 10-man, obviously.
We've had 10-man. We've had 6-man.
I don't think we've had an 8-man in a while.
Well, I guess, I mean, Survivor Series matches.
But well, I'm talking about, like
non-Survivor Series matches, probably WrestleMania 8 would be my guess.
Yeah.
All right, we head backstage. Stephanie McMahon giving a pep talk to Billy and Chuck. We're no longer gay, just kind of goofs now. They almost feel like they were trying to do like a mini DX. They have like darker hair and they're growing in their beards. And
yeah.
I don't know. They're not as separated from the pack now. They're just like a bunch of guys. I don't know. It felt weird. And it felt like they were like trying too hard to be like kind of funny and goofy, like a mini DX / Edge and Christian. Like Billy and, I don't know, Billy was like doing the ooh kind of.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know, pretending he was scared. It felt very like, hey, we're wise guys kind of comedy.
Yeah.
I don't know. It felt stupid after what they had been, you know?
Right, right. Well, we'll get to what happened to them when we get to that match in a couple of minutes. Yeah, they lost kind of their luster, and we'll explain why in a moment. Yeah. All right, next up, we have our first title match of the evening, JR. Weird match for him.
Yeah.
Kind of in many ways. We're talking, of course, about the Nature Boy Ric Flair taking on your new Intercontinental Champion. Of course, your champion was RVD, who had defeated Chris Benoit at SummerSlam. But RVD lost to this guy, JR, a guy we've been talking about extensively pretty much every month.
Right.
Chris Jericho.
Yeah, the 916 Raw in Denver. Jericho won his 6th Intercontinental Championship and finally has a little bit of direction again. Kind of been really meandering big time.
Yeah.
That's a key word in 2002. A lot of meandering going on.
A lot of meandering going on, yes.
But he's finally found a direction. In another shocking upset on Raw, Scott, Ric Flair actually lost a match clean to Rico on the 916 episode. Pretty questionable decision at the time. Many people wondered why you'd have Flair job clean on Raw with no buildup to put Rico over. This was a time when Flair was still somewhat protected a bit. Later that night, Flair was further humiliated when Triple H ran him down and called him a has-been.
Mm-hmm. Flair said he was still capable out there, but the storyline heading into this match portrayed him as a man left trying to prove himself to everyone. And I thought that carried over, Scott, into the story of the match. That is, feels like one last run for Flair. Like, that's the story here. The IC belt is on the line, and Flair just trying to give it one more run. Jericho finally finding his footing after a rough summer. I thought much better chemistry here than SummerSlam. A lot of back and forth, better bumping. Jericho takes a nice fall over the ring post to the mat.
Yes.
Yep. Flair is moving really well, and he seems re-energized now. Nice flow with structure, no long heat segment, just a lot of back and forth with some stiff punches, I thought, from both men. Jericho had a great possum tease with his leg, and when Flair finally just kind of backs off and lets the ref check him, Jericho pops up and puts him in the walls. I like the booking here because it was like Jericho outfoxed Flair, so he outflared Flair, basically. Now, and that adds to the age story. Like, oh man, really, does he have it anymore? He let a guy like Jericho completely work him over in his own game and get the win. And I like the booking here, and it was a nice sprint. It kind of made up for the SummerSlam match. I thought it was a bit of a mess with the stupid finish. I thought this one really made up for it.
Yes, I agree.
And it pays off later, as we'll see.
Yeah, of course. To get back to what you were saying about that match with Rico, I think this is the whole package. I think they were trying to package Flair as a guy who
needed direction.
Yeah, and had nothing left. Like, he was losing matches to bums, and he was, you know, getting put over the wall, getting, you know, pulled out under the carpet to things that he did to other guys in 1987. And I think that was the whole package. So I didn't have an issue with him losing to Rico. I thought that was fine.
Well, I think it's more looking at the time, though. Mm-hmm. Flair felt very, like Flair, like 6 years later, you're not surprised if he loses that match, or 5 years
right,
or whatever. I mean, but at that point, it was still shocking to see him lose on Raw to a guy like Rico. That really hadn't been solidified as any kind of threat. So it felt very random. And at the time, it was almost like, wow, these guys wanted Austin to lose on TV, and now Ric Flair is losing on TV. I mean, Flair was still a name commodity that a win over meant something. I mean, I think we kind of forget what that was like because so much has gone on since then where beating Flair didn't mean as much, and shit like this is why. But at the time, it still felt like a big deal. I mean, how many matches has he really lost since he's come back? I mean, he lost to... I mean, him and Show lost to Austin. He lost to Taker. Like, all big names. Hogan.
Right.
Vince. You know, he's had big marquee losses, but he hasn't lost a lot of just week-to-week Raw matches at all.
Right. That's true. And I think, and to kind of play into that, though, I think that's where the storyline really took shape because of that. Now, was it needed?
No, I think you're dead on. I do. I think you're right. I think it was part of the story. I'm just saying when it initially happened, it was a big shock.
Oh, yeah. No, it was.
But looking back now, it made perfect sense, and especially when you realize that the legend of Flair quickly doesn't mean as much as it used to.
Yeah,
but at the time...
It's upsetting, yeah.
At the time, it felt like, what the hell's going on, you know?
Right. This match is just over 6 minutes, but I agree with you. I think they compacted 6 good minutes.
Yeah, they never slow down. I really enjoyed it. I liked it much better than SummerSlam.
Yeah, see, I like the SummerSlam match slightly more than you, but I still think this match is better than that one. I do agree with you on that. I think it was more Jericho had a little more confidence in his performance, being the champion. It was kind of cool seeing Flair in a different title match, going after a belt you're not used to him going after. So I thought that was kind of cool, too. And that's where I started to see... Well, I'll ask you that when we get to the segment, which is coming up after the next match, if you saw something coming.
Mm-hmm.
But I was a little surprised that they did the whole Flair got hoodwinked, flim-flammed, bamboozled.
I liked it, though. I don't know.
I didn't dislike it. I was surprised by it.
Yeah.
But it capped off. It was a great package.
Yeah.
I thought the whole match was really good. And
it pays off later again, like we said.
Yeah, and a lot of... confidence in Jericho's game again, in terms of his character. Now that he's got a title again, his sixth Intercontinental title reign, obviously surpassing Razor Ramon as the greatest Intercontinental champion of all time. And I think being champion helped out a little bit and kind of steered him in the right direction, like we said earlier. So Chris Jericho, with a little flim-flammery, retains the WWE Intercontinental Championship.
We had it backstage again, Scott.
Yes.
Eric Bischoff giving a pep talk to this new team we'll talk about shortly. 3-minute warning. The brand war has rolled on, of course. Lots of brand pride. Rico has turned heel, moved to Raw. HLA gimmick in full effect to Eric Bischoff, and that's hot lesbian action.
What?
Bischoff trying to sleaze up Raw and drive up ratings, and I love sleazy heel dickhead Bischoff. I mean, this is just him at his best.
Yeah, he's such a trash bag here. It's like so funny.
He's fantastic. So HLA, of course, was his way to increase ratings by having lesbians make out on TV. So it plays a role later in the show. We'll get to it. But it was fantastic. I loved all this stuff. I'm a huge Bischoff GM, Raw GM mark. I mean, I love the next 3 years of him running the show. Some of my favorite heel work.
Yeah, he fit perfectly. He wasn't. It wasn't like, you know, renegade NWO Bischoff. It was like smarmy, you know, used car salesman sleazoid Bischoff, which, be honest with you, fit perfectly with the storyline with Stephanie McMahon. So I agree with you. It was even awkward. Like, you don't see him acting this way. It was almost like, I don't want to say tough to watch, but it was just strange hearing him talk. Right. And when we get to the segment later, it just seemed even weirder. But okay. Next up, another rematch, JR, from SummerSlam, mm-hmm. continuing a fantastic year, in my opinion, for Edge. And he takes on Eddie Guerrero here. Of course, he beat Eddie at SummerSlam. But that feud would continue. Now, speaking of these two gentlemen, JR, why don't you delve a little bit more into what you talked about earlier with Paul Heyman?
Sure. Now, the head writer of SmackDown, Paul Heyman, Edge and Eddie Guerrero are two of the now infamous featured players known as the SmackDown Six, guys that Heyman used to solidify his upper mid card and ensure every episode of the show had a rocking match similar to his old ECW booking. We have Edge, Eddie Guerrero, Kurt Angle, Chris Benoit, Rey Mysterio, and Chavo Guerrero. Six guys that he would run into the ground with long matches each week, great pay-per-view feuds, and they'd all interact weekly. All six of these guys were complete studs that they had moved over to SmackDown, as they really, you could tell, they were trying to make Raw the entertainment brand and SmackDown the heavy, heavy wrestling brand, and Heyman was the perfect guy to run that show.
Mm-hmm.
Eddie and Edge had a rubber match after the show on the 9/26 SmackDown, when Edge would pick up the win in an awesome no disqualification match, which Eddie would actually receive a standing ovation from after the match. And it seemed like the fans were really starting to get behind Latino Heat. So this has been a great feud, and very similar to Eddie's last feud in the spring with our Rob Van Dam, where they would have two great pay-per-view matches and a blow-off on TV, and that seemed to be the growing trend here in 2002. Mm-hmm. Right. Also interesting for Edge that he actually would win a feud, because he does lose this match here, Scott, and it almost seems like, okay, same Edge formula, right? Win the first match, lose the second, but he would win the rubber match. I like the story here that Eddie felt disrespected. That was the whole reasoning he wanted the rematch. He felt like Edge was getting all the publicity off the SummerSlam match. Edge was doing a concussion angle. Edge has had very long series feuds since August, and he needed to come out on top of one. Eddie attacks the head, and much slower than SummerSlam, but it had more structure to it. Eddie had a lot of good heat. Has really melded nicely right back into the roster, I thought, Scott. Do you agree with that? Like, did not take him long at all to be a high-quality pickup to the Jack mid-card.
Absolutely. That was a perfect formula.
Yeah.
Paul Heyman and these guys.
Oh, yeah.
There's no doubt about it. They established Raw as the character-driven brand.
And that was even like the name brand.
Right.
You know, outside of Undertaker that they moved to SmackDown, but it, more of like the attitude-y stuff. And SmackDown was just more of the in-ring.
Yep.
So, but do you agree that Eddie has just seamlessly transitioned right back into the mid card for them?
Yep, absolutely. And I still continue, and Kevin Kelly can argue with me all he wants, but I really do think that Edge has just grown with every match, and Eddie is a guy that, at least here's a case where Eddie is obviously a very accomplished worker, and to a certain extent, almost wrestles the way Edge used to.
Mm-hmm.
Edge is not as aerial. He still is a little bit, but not as much as he was.
Wait, you're saying Eddie wrestles like Edge used to?
Yes. Like I said, my point is...
You want to reword that? Eddie's on another planet. I mean, Edge never touched this style.
No, but I mean, Eddie utilizes some more aerial maneuvers than Edge does now as a singles guy that he did when he was with Christian.
But Edge was more of a spot guy. Eddie's all psychology. I mean, Eddie puts together beautiful stories in his matches. I mean, it's, everything makes sense. Everything works from one step to the next. I mean, I don't know if Edge ever, and I know you're an Edge fan, but I don't think he ever comes close to two levels below what Eddie was at his
peak. No, you're right. I'm just specifically talking about the use of aerial tactics, the ropes and the turnbuckles and that kind of thing. But in terms of levels, no, Eddie is on another time zone.
Yeah.
And is there a guy, and we'll talk more about this over the next couple of years, is there a guy who getting fired couldn't have been better for than Eddie? I mean, he was in the both personally and professionally in the toilet when he was cut loose at the end of 2000.
Yeah, no, he needed the wake up call big time, and it saved his life and his career at that point. Definitely needed. I'd say Regal's probably the only one that was closest a couple years before that.
Right. Yeah.
Crowd seemed to actually turn on Edge a bit as the match went on. Edge is really doing the wobbly concussion selling, a lot of near falls. Match got better as it went. I actually thought it was not really up to the expectations. I thought they dumbed it down a bit this time around. I love the spot where Edge goes for the spear and Eddie dodges him and runs him into the exposed turnbuckle to really continue to work the concussion thing.
Right.
They fought for a superplex. Eddie, as they're up there, Eddie smashes Edge into the turnbuckle and then hits an awesome sunset flip powerbomb. The fantastic finishing spot, I thought, made up for the shaky first half of the match.
Mm.
But it had very good psychology throughout. The finish paid off. It made perfect sense. Edge had the concussion. Eddie worked the head. At the end, he hit the exposed buckle in a nasty sunset flip powerbomb for the win that I thought all just made perfect sense. Mm. Edge loses another pay-per-view feud as his development year continues. And again, good match. Not great, but a very good feud overall. So I thought these guys, maybe expectations were a little bit too high for them heading in. But it was still very, very good matches, but you kind of expect great when these guys are involved in 0-2.
Yeah, I mean, I agree this. Exceptional. I graded a 4. It was. I think maybe the pacing was different. I feel like Eddie was dominating this match almost exclusively. Edge would have the occasional you know face comeback, but Eddie was just so smooth to squelch it and continue taking the match over. It's also during this match, JR, that I really feel like, to a certain extent, Cole and Taz really started coming into their own.
Yeah, definitely.
There were a couple moments where Taz is like, Eddie, Edge won last month, right? Seriously? Could somebody talk in his ear? You know?
No, they were getting really good. I really enjoyed their chemistry and they were a perfect fit for the shows they were on. King, yep. I mean, as annoying as he's been, him and JR, really a good fit for the Raw storyline, character-driven stuff that JR could push all the storylines around. And Cole and Taz, more of the sporty type announcers, pushing psychology and tail of the tape and calling actual moves and spots in the ring. Like they fit perfectly with the SmackDown 6 era. Yep. And even the main event style that we see it develop on SmackDown due to who's on top. I thought Cole and Taz, they really assigned perfect announce teams for what they had for each brand, I thought. They did a nice job there. So, good match, and I definitely enjoyed it, Scott. But then we had backstage again, where your boy, the champion, visits RVD and questions his passion and desire, because RVD's style is always to be calm and cool and collected. Hunter's very confident and cocky, and he bags on Ric Flair, too, who's changing in the background. Says he used to have the fire and hate, but not anymore. He calls them both losers. RVD kind of had a shaky retort, but this segment was completely carried by Hunter, I thought.
Yeah, I think what's up. I think RVD's suspect promo skills were kind of exposed in this feud.
Well, that I was gonna say that. I mean, you know, it's funny because you look at SmackDown and what we've always talked about with ECW for Paul Heyman was how he used to accentuate people's strengths and hide their weaknesses, and I feel like he does that on SmackDown as well. You go over to Raw and you got, you know, Hunter basically telling RVD, hey, we don't think you give a shit because you're so lazy and stupid. And then RVD's like, is that what you feel like, brother? Okay. You know? So I just felt like I know we're going to talk about this a lot, and I think some of it's unwarranted, and we'll cover that as we go along. But this is right off the bat. It's like Hunter's reign is off to a weird start. It's like, all right, we get him out there at RVD, so let's call out all the things he clearly sucks at and make those the storyline. Just didn't seem to really make sense, you know?
That is true. Oh, God.
All right, buddy. I'll put you over. See you out there.
The greatest water spitter ever. We'll get to that. We'll get to the few. But
yeah. Weird. Just a weird decision.
Oh, God. All right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was kind of strange. And I like the way that Hunter goes, look at that guy over there behind you. He used to have the fire.
Look at that old
now
piece of shit.
Broken down and old. Such a fucking asshole. He really is. Oh, Jesus.
I mean, it was good heel stuff, but you just knew RVD would never be able to talk back at him, you know, because he's just not good at it.
No. I'd rather, how does he say it? I'd rather be with a hardworking loser than a wannabe winner. It was really bad. It was really bad. All right. Our next match has a lot of meat behind it.
I'd rather be with that washed up old piece of garbage loser than you.
You're like the champion with nice hair. Okay. And you spit water.
Yeah, we have a lot to talk about here.
Yeah. Why don't we dive right in.
I'm going to start giving you 3 minutes to explain things.
Well, we can start talking about RVD. Can you talk about RVD during this explanation?
Have Derek LaRue come give you a frog splash off my couch?
Oh, God.
3 minute warning, Scott. A new tag team had burst onto the scene in the summer. Playing the role of Eric Bischoff's heavies, the team is comprised of Jamal and Rosie, both nephews of Afa the Samoan, had trained under his watch in the mid-90s. They actually had a brief cup of coffee in 1995. If you remember, Scott, they're spotted in the audience and referred to as Fatu's family members.
Yes.
The intended story is that they were going to corrupt the happy-go-lucky Making a Difference Fatu, but the angles quickly dropped. They were reassigned to HWA, which was the WWF territory at the time, renamed ECMO and Chemo. Throughout the together, they were known as the Island Boys, had one reign as HWA Tag Team Champions. In 2000, they left the HWA, spent 2 years in Japan and Memphis refining their act. Vince came calling again in 2002, renamed them Jamal and Rosie. They debuted on the July 22nd Raw. Bischoff had become bored with certain wrestlers and gave them 3 minutes to entertain him. On that night, D'Lo Brown and Sean Stasiak failed to do so, and his new backup made their debut. Due to the 3 minute gimmick, they were officially dubbed 3 minute Warning. Mm-hmm. They garnered a lot of heat from the fans when they injured Lillian Garcia at an attack prior to SummerSlam, and they got over quickly with their high impact offense as both men moved well and efficiently for big guys. I guess we should also mention here, Scott, as we touched upon the HLA, another one of Bischoff's ratings ploys over the summer was a bit more controversial. In an attempt to spice up Raw, Bischoff introduced HLA hot lesbian action. On the 9-9 Raw, Bischoff brought out some lesbians and talked them into undressing. Before they could, 3 minute Warning made an appearance and laid them out to some big time heat. The following week, a women's group called the International Organization for Women protested outside the building. Eric allowed them into the arena so he could confront them in the ring. When he's calling for 3 minute Warning, the ladies backed off, except for one who stepped up and punted him in the groin, ripping off a wig and revealing herself to be Stephanie McMahon. Billy and Chuck then came out and gave Bischoff a clothesline from the top rope. Billy, Chuck, and Steph would escape through the crowd, and Bischoff was left steaming in the ring. So an HLA stipulation was added to this match. If Billy and Chuck lost, Stephanie would have to partake in HLA. And if 3MW lost, Bischoff would kiss Stephanie's ass in the middle of the ring. Scott, Stephanie during that attack, when Billy and Chuck attacked Bischoff, screaming on the outside of the ring was one of the most grating, annoying things ever.
Oh, I know, yeah. Yes.
Like, I was cringing.
Yeah.
At the awful, awful...
Yeah, it had that 01, 02, early 02 Stephanie sound to it. But JR, why don't
no,
you let
way worse than that.
Why don't wow, yeah, I guess yeah. Why don't you let the listeners know why Billy and Chuck were even involved in this in the first place?
All right. Well, as the weeks wore on, Billy and Chuck got cozier and cozier. They eventually got to the point where they basically proposed to each other and had set up a commitment ceremony for the 9/12 SmackDown, and they actually got some positive mainstream coverage as GLAAD sent the couple a wedding present, a gravy boat. Took out an ad in the paper. Things would quickly become unraveled, however. During the show, Rico, who had doubled as a wedding planner, came out to make sure everything was set up just right for the ceremony. Steph came out to start the festivities, noting this was a historic occasion. The grooms appeared, serenaded to the ring by a group singing It's Raining Men. Billy and Chuck hit the ring and were all smiles as the song played on. Both men would read some vows, and we even get to see a quick video package detailing the relationship. As a minister asked if anyone dissented, the Godfather and Ten Hoes made an appearance to try and sway them. After Godfather questioned the decision, Rico ushered him away. And to the surprising consternation of Billy and Chuck, who started to think, I don't know if we want to really go through with this.
Yeah, this is going a little too far.
As the ceremony proceeded, Billy and Chuck continued to look more and more perplexed as Rico kept urging them to go forward. Both men answered yes when asked, but it took prodding from Rico. And just before the minister pronounced them as wedded, Chuck interrupted him and Billy spilled their guts. They yelled at Rico, admitting that they were not gay and that this was all supposed to just be a publicity stunt to increase ratings. Rico flipped out and said he knew Billy and Chuck would back out at the last minute. At this point, the minister stepped up and said that a commitment like Billy and Chuck's would never change, and that could
I lost my spot. And can last 50 years, 16 months, or
3 minutes.
And with that, the minister ripped off the awesome latex mask and revealed himself to be Eric Bischoff to a massive pop to the crowd.
The coolest Bischoff moments ever.
Oh, it was phenomenal. It was great. So well done. It looked nothing like Bischoff, and he did a tremendous acting job.
Yeah.
A really memorable moment. Even on a tape show, it was still fantastic.
Yeah.
Rico knocked Billy in the gut, and Bischoff grabbed Stephanie's three-minute warning, hit the ring, and took care of business. They would take out Billy, Chuck, and Stephanie, leave the ring a mess. The Raw crew quickly bolted as a majority of SmackDown locker room emptied out to protect Stephanie. It was later announced Rico had been an inside man for Bischoff and jumped over to Raw, and that he had organized a commitment ceremony to embarrass Billy and Chuck and set up the attack on a rival show. So we're not going to touch the the part of this that they're portraying as like them trying to do this as being something really bad and awful with the Godfather with the hose and all that. We will stay away from that, but the angle itself was phenomenal. Like we mentioned, the whole stuff with Bischoff and the latex mask, I thought was one of the greatest SmackDown moments in the run so far. Just something you did not expect at all for him to be. So really well done.
The way, when he changed his voice, he's like 16 years. So what did he say? 50 years, 16 months, yep. Or 3 minutes. And then you hear a pause. Did I just, and then that right. Smarmy, sleazoid Bischoff voice, and he rips the thing. Oh my God, it was awesome. It was really cool.
Yeah,
Bischoff is definitely, well, I think a lot of people have to give Bischoff credit for pretty much checking his ego at the door and just going with it and having fun, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I give him a lot of credit, because you could argue that he could have tanked this and been like, you know, still pissed off at what happened in the Monday Night Wars and all that stuff. And he's like, you know what? Whatever.
No, he dove in head first.
Yeah, whatever. Time to move on. And it was fantastic. It was hilarious. And I tell you, him and Stephanie had some pretty good chemistry together.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Well, they were really good. I mean, as annoying as Stephanie could be, her and Bischoff did work well together in a lot of these angles. I thought it was really well done. I thought the brand pride was really starting to take over.
Mm-hmm.
You could start to feel the hate between the shows. I liked that the SmackDown locker room emptied out to protect her against Raw. Like, I thought that was a cool touch.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. But yeah, I agree. I think they've done a really good job. So I thought 3 Minute Warnings had a very strong debut. They put them over hard. And
yes.
Really, I love the way they worked. They were really impactful in the ring. They were really moved well for big guys. And everything looked like it hurt, which I'm sure it did. I mean, the whole part of them beating up women was kind of weird. Like, that was very edgy at the time, too.
Right,
even
yes,
during a period where, I don't want to say it was acceptable, but done regularly. Kind of an odd feud. Billy and Chuck are just another team now after the fantastic wedding stuff. Tag division is really completely overhauled, finally, like we mentioned at SummerSlam. Really building that animosity between brands. Bischoff had all the issues with the women's group. Rico was the mole. Just a ton of storyline stuff. Billy and Chuck still have the same theme, which I thought was weird. Still come out to the... Everything else was weird. Yeah.
But with the crowd popping for them, it actually sounded really cool. It's like, yeah. You know?
But it was odd. I mean, they went through this whole thing about how they're
not
gay, and then they play that music.
But the theme is still... It would have been great if they both came out to the one. That would have been pretty neat.
Yeah, you know, something. Even just some kind of rock beat, anything. I thought 3MW had great-looking offense, very violent. Cole lists all the people assaulted by 3MW. I love it, too. He's like, Lillian Garcia, Lance Storm, lesbians!
Yeah. I was just about to say that. I wrote it down, too. I had on my sheet in front of me, like, I got to say this to Jerry. I was like, great, he's just listing guys. And what else did he say? Sean Stasiak, Rico, lesbians.
It was really well done. 3 minute warning really dominated the match from the bell. Crowd heat was mainly on Rico in this one for the main part. Billy and Chuck got some revenge on Rico, but it ends up costing them. Raw and Bischoff win. We get more HLA tees, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. A fine match, a good showcase of 3 minute warning, and at the end for Billy and Chuck, did you think it was a little premature? I felt like they were such a big players in the tag division for a little bit there, and now they're basically done after this.
Well, I mean, I'll answer the question with a question. Would there, if in order to protect them as a team, who else could you have put in that spot to not job? You know, if you didn't want them to job there, who else could have gone in that slot that you could have Rikishi and somebody, just some other team, or just some other guy with Rikishi or something?
Yeah,
if you wanted to protect Billy and Chuck, it's possible. Sure, you could have put there's a myriad of baby faces on SmackDown. You could have put in here. Hell, you could have put Ray in here.
No, I mean, they're fine. It's just kind of sad that this is it for them. That's all.
Oh, yeah. No, it is. It is. But
the junior DX thing just wasn't going to work.
No, they did. Billy was Billy and Chuck was Chuck. That's pretty much what it comes down to. But I've had this Michael Cole thing in my head all day. Sean Stasiak, Rico, lesbians.
Yeah, it was
like
really
they're a faction.
They
the
were.
Gang Wars introducing the lesbians.
The gang bang.
The Truth Commission.
What's this HLA? I just wanted some bomb bread.
Girls kissing? Oh, that's weird. The rabbi would not allow that.
This is why you can't go out anymore.
Let's just stay in and put on Jeopardy.
Those
so
kids and match, their cars.
The match itself is good. I mean, it's nothing earth-shattering. Just over six and a half
special.
Minutes. Nothing
I think
crazy.
We talked about pretty much anything that was interesting.
Yeah, this is just a match just to get 3M, called them a 3MB. Dreamin' of Warning, the win.
Yep.
And so it is official.
I'll tell you what else lasts 3 minutes. This commercial break to Wheel of Fortune.
Ugh, it's so long. I don't need any more butter commercials.
That Vanna White dresses are too revealing.
Oh, it is too. I love Pat Sajak's tie. So, 3 minute warning wins, and now Stephanie McMahon must perform some HLA. And
what a mensch.
What a mensch. And we'll get to that later on in the program. All right.
Amazing how you knock me off my feet. And the light is so forever. A dream of you and me together. Cause tonight is the night when two become one. I need some love like I never needed love before. My boyfriend's back and you're gonna be in trouble. Hey la, hey la, my boyfriend's back.
We were just one, babe. And so it begins.
Yes.
Time for me to put on my armor and deflect all of the slings and arrows. From this point forward. All right. Obviously, on the September 2nd Raw, 1 week after SummerSlam, when it was announced that Brock Lesnar, the WWE champion, was officially signed exclusively to the Blue Brand,
mm-hmm.
that left Raw top flight championless.
And of course, we should just harken back. Remember, Stephanie kept teasing that she had a big surprise for Bischoff, that she had the trump card, basically, and that was mm-hmm. what it was. If you remember, the night after SummerSlam, Stephanie is talking to Bischoff back in the parking lot, and Brock gets in her limo, and they drive off, and that's it. Takes the belt to SmackDown.
Right. So, on the September 2nd Raw from Milwaukee, as JR mentioned, Eric Bischoff walks down the ramp with a Halliburton.
Yeah, baby. Hey, baby.
And
Halliburton.
And he says that Raw needs its own world champion. You deserve your own world champion. Now, I want to preface something because this is the fact that the H haters seem to forget. The night after SummerSlam at Madison Square Garden, Triple H won a number one contenders match against The Undertaker. So at the time of Brock Lesnar going exclusively to SmackDown, Triple H was the number one contender for that belt.
I'm sorry. Did you say 3 minutes? yes, you're right, Scott. Triple H was the number one contender.
And
but the title's brand specific now.
Mm-hmm.
Natural thing was to give Triple H the other major title on Raw. But many fans kind of ignored that rationale. Looked at the fact that Triple H and Stephanie were dating behind the scenes. And that the nepotism was starting to run a little bit rampant, as Dusty Rhodes may say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he has any nerve.
Well, also you have to remember, too, is that Triple H had his first defense that night, faced Ric Flair for the title, and mm-hmm. retained. Did you think they should have just made that for the vacant belt?
Yeah, I'd have been happy with a battle royal. I'm not upset. How do I word this? I understand the rationale.
In love. You're in love. That's how you word it.
Well, goes without saying. The problem is not how he is him getting it. It's how he got it. But the question really is, JR, regardless of how he got it, everybody would have been pissed off anyway.
Right.
So
and I don't,
you could paint it. I mean, we're talking about it from a non-kayfabe, from a internet IWC perspective. It didn't matter whether you had a battle royal or you had
tournament.
A tournament at Unforgiven and maybe at this show and then stretched it out a little bit.
Well, I'm going to step on your side here for a minute and defend the happy couple. Mm-hmm. I thought it made sense. You could have done the tournament. You could have done all that stuff. But this becomes part of the bigger angle that Hunter and Bischoff power hungry and taking
yes.
over Raw. So they sacrificed exactly. the credibility of the victory to set up that storyline that Bischoff was running amok on Raw, that he was doing whatever he wanted, and that Hunter was part of that power game. So, I mean, it's part of the story. I feel like anyone but Triple H, no one probably would have said anything. I agree with you. If mm-hmm. it was Kurt Angle, like I don't think anyone would have really cared. I think it was the fact that it was Triple H that people got pissed off, and they thought it was like a vanity thing for him, and there may have been part of that behind it. But I thought what happened actually really fit the storyline behind it, that Bischoff and Hunter were power-hungry and taking over the show, and it was a lot of controversy. I thought it was cool that they brought back the big gold belt. I thought that made a lot of sense for Bischoff to be the one to do that, mm-hmm. carry on the NWA legacy. And I thought that Hunter was a good choice to do that because he's completely overhauled his look and character now, slipping mm-hmm. into the true 80s NWA style to yep. solidify his heel turn and be different. So he's away from the beard. I thought if he was going to go this route, he had to completely do it the opposite of what he had been doing. I thought he did.
Coming out in a polo shirt. And
right, exactly. The khakis and the polo, no more jeans and 17 vests and jackets on and not growling anymore, a little bit yeah. more. So his hair is more feathered. So, you know, he's trying to do the 80s NWA Ric Flair, basically, and, mm-hmm. and run this territory that was now his of Raw. So, I mean, I got what it all was, you know. So I'm with you on that. I'm definitely, I think when you look at it objectively behind it, and say, you know, it made a lot of sense for the power-hungry duo to just award this guy a title.
Mm. Yeah. You're not going to argue. No argument out of me. And I think the other thing that pissed people off in this stretch is who he faces in this match. Another, you know, internet-beloved guy in Rob Van Dam. You know, if it was anybody else on the roster that was just another guy, they'd be like, oh, whatever. But everybody, you know, we're almost up to a year now that he's been in the company. We all know, you know, we've talked about it extensively on these vaults, what has happened to RVD since he's been here. But I think that was the other reason that people got torqued off about it. It's like, oh, sure, take the guy we all like and turn him into nothing. Well, you know, the guy can't cut a promo. So how do you ignore it? It's the way it works.
And it's clearly not as over, nearly as over as it was a year earlier. And that right. was the time to do it if you're going to do it when they didn't really need him to talk. I mean, if you're going to be the new face of this brand, I thought it would have been really tough to put the title on him. And there's a lot we're going to debate of guys that Triple H faces. I'm okay with RVD here not winning. We'll get to that in a minute. He was awarded this title shot by winning a fatal four-way number one contender match against Big Show, Chris Jericho, and Jeff Hardy on the 9-9 Raw in Ames, Iowa. And that's how he receives the match here. I mean, the match, I thought, was fine. RVD elevated back up, still over at the magic is just kind of gone. Good choice for antithesis of Triple H. You had the mm-hmm. you know, arrogant, cocky Triple H that was very brash about it, and RVD was just kind of confident in himself and just kind of laid back and cool about it. Not a great promo, RVD, like you said. A tough spot. You can't keep hot potatoing the title, but RVD couldn't really afford another big loss, or else you're really just going to completely cut him off at the knees. And the way they built it up, where Triple H talked about how RVD didn't give a shit about anything, you kind of feel like RVD needed to dispatch of him. Mm-hmm. But to me, you couldn't immediately potato the title back to RVD after you just handed it to Triple H. I thought you needed to build that heat a little bit longer. So it was a really tough spot they were in. RVD's lack of passion due to the style versus obsessive Triple H was the story here. King was in full heel mode, playing up the story and insulting Ric Flair constantly throughout the match to play up what had happened earlier. Matt stuff early, RVD trying to stay cool. RVD takes over on the mat and mocks Triple H's water spit. I know you had mentioned that earlier. Odd structure early, a lot of choppiness, but the crowd was into it. I'll give him that.
Yeah.
RVD with a crazy somersault plancha misses and hits the floor. That was a nutty bump for him to take. I mean, just completely splats on the mat on the floor.
when Hunter dodges him. Hunter beat him on the floor using a lot of the surroundings. Fine heat segment, wearing out RVD. He went to the top to mark RVD, but it backfired and opened up RVD's comeback. And Scott, I'm going to let you talk about this now. Hunter goes to the sleeper, trying to revive this move as a legitimate. He was actually using it as a finisher on Raw at some points in here. And trying to revive the move in Brutus Beefcake style.
Terrible.
Yeah, not a,
hate
a fan.
Hated that.
I mean, I get his point, though. I mean, I get that he was trying to kind of retrain the crowd on some of these old submission-style moves to get them over and not having to do crazy stuff. I mean, I get the idea behind it. But, I mean, we haven't seen the sleeper as a finish. And, I mean, since Roddy Piper, you know? Yeah, Beefcake.
I would have been happy if you brought back the Indian Deathlock. I've always loved that submission move.
Well, he was using his little out.
Yeah. Yeah, he only pulled that out every once in a while. But I just hate the sleeper. I just never was. Even in the 80s, I wasn't a big fan of that move. I thought the Indian Deathlock would have been. If he was going to start doing submission moves and kind of doing NWA style pace matches, I thought the Indian Deathlock would have been a better choice. But crowd's into it. It was all right.
Well, let's get to let's get to the finish and we'll break it down. RVD connects on his next aerial attack to the floor. Our ref bump actually gives RVD two visual pins, which I had forgotten about.
Yes.
So they kind of do make it seem like he had a legit chance, but he gets screwed. RVD blocks a sledgehammer shot. Ric Flair shows up, and it's an obvious turn. You can see coming 2 miles away. But it was a good one. I thought it was needed. Flair's a heel is way better, and it really helped put Triple H over to have him as his manager. RVD was actually well protected in the loss. He got two visual pins. It took interference and a weapon to beat him. So, the memory of this is always that he squashed him and RVD looked stupid, but he was actually really well protected throughout the match. Mm. Nothing special, like you said, though. Hot down the stretch, a sensical finish, but not a great start to this pay-per-view run of this title. And it's funny that it's in the mid-card. It would be for a little bit here, but not the way you probably wanted to launch the pay-per-view legacy of the World Heavyweight title.
No. The match is average. The ending is expected. I mean, the minute you saw Flair come down, you pretty much knew where this was leading to. I was, of course, on cloud nine, always wanted to see these two work together. And I was preparing for, and you know, I don't know if there was rumblings about what the future was going to hold pertaining to Triple H and Flair together and whether they were going to add people. I don't remember there being any rumors at this point. I think it's still a little early. I think that started being talked about maybe towards the end of 02 into 03. But the match itself is just flat, and the first of what would be back-to-back flat World Heavyweight title matches on a pay-per-view. Our next pay-per-view match involving Triple H would not have anything to do with the match itself or the promos, but the but the skit.
Very interesting start to this, and you could tell already they were transitioning RVD out of the title picture. Just using him to be the first fall guy for Hunter. But I thought pairing him with Flair was really good. I thought it was a smart move. He's doing the Flair act anyway. Why not have them be together to help legitimize it? So, and Flair was lost in this face role.
Yeah, I thought he needed, clueless.
Yeah, he needed to settle into something a little bit better. Yeah. So this was something more worthy of his talents.
Mm. Yeah, I agree. So Triple H in the first ever match as World Heavyweight Champion. Obviously when Jericho and Rock were feuding with it 1 year earlier, at the time it was still called the WCW Championship. So this is the first time it is officially called the World Heavyweight Championship. Triple H keeps it, retains over Rob Van Dam in a fairly mediocre match. All right. Why don't we take a break? When we come back, we've got, the other big belt. We've got my PIC's betrothed in a reigniting of a feud, and another title match as well. So two title matches, and my PIC's boy. First, a word or two. Because?
Well, listen.
You look like you're in your fifth stage of AIDS treatment.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly from Ring of Honor Wrestling. Make sure you check out The Kevin Kelly Show, each and every week, placetobenation.com. We'll be talking about wrestling in the past and wrestling today, plus be talking about all kinds of sports and pop culture, whatever's on your mind, too. We'll answer your questions each and every week. The Kevin Kelly Show, right here, placetobenation.com.
Let me know you in the house.
This is the king of old school, Steve Corino, and you've heard all the rumors, and it's true. The Steve Corino Show is here. We talk about wrestling. We talk about baseball, movies, television, anything you want to talk about. New guest every week. That's right. The Steve Corino Show every week here on the Place to Be Nation.
Hey, this is Bauer from The Bauer Show, sports and more. You can check out The Bauer Show podcast every Wednesday and Friday right here at placetobenation.com.
The Bauer Show.
Chad, do you hate it when commercials run and run?
What do you mean, Parv?
Oh, never mind.
Listen to Where the Big Boys Play on placetobenation.com and find us on iTunes. We are the only WCW Supercard exclusive podcast.
Hey, this is Rob Naylor. Do you still enjoy pro wrestling? Believe it or not, I still do. So you better join myself and Will on the Google Wrestling Podcast exclusively at placetobenation.com.
Shit, I wasn't ready. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening and... Shit. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening to guys talk about old school wrestling, follow me and Charles on Wrestling with the Past podcast on Place to Be Nation.
So you got the script, yeah? You all got it?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, this sounds terrible. The Titans are wrestling. Oh, brilliant. Sorry. The Titans are wrestling off.
Pete, I'm a lead analyst for a show and breakdown matches.
Kelly, lead historian. I'm a jobber lover. Are you?
Johnny and I drink.
And yes, me, Bob. We watch old school wrestling and love it.
Titans of Wrestling.
You know you want to hear it.
What's going on? This is the Godfather, Nate Milton, with an offer you cannot refuse. Each and every week you can join Marcus Vanderberg, Big Nasty Alfred Kunawa, and myself on the Kings of Sport podcast, available exclusively on placetobenation.com, your one-stop spot for the best in sports and pop culture.
Hey, this is Ben Morse from Marvel.com as well as the Brad and Chad Show, and I've got a new podcast. Well, I'm part of a new podcast, Place to Be Nation's Main Event. Hosted by Scott Criscolo every other week, it's a roundtable discussion with myself, Andrew Reich, Steve Willey, Jordan Duncan, and an assortment of special guests as we talk wrestling today, the big questions, and our feelings. Please, please, please check this podcast out, because if the ratings go down, I know I'm the first head on the chopping block for Justin Rosero. See you guys every other week on Place to Be Nation's Main Event.
I'm Scott Criscolo, and your new home for sports is Place to Be Nation's Extra Point. Join me and the doctor, Giorgio Bellino, for your sports hookup, whether it's NFL, Major League Baseball, NBA, colleges, or the Cowboys MMA Blitz.
Forget about it. Plus, join me for my prescription where I will solve all the world's sports problems with my own brand of medicine.
That's Place to Be Nation's Extra Point here on PlaceToBeNation.com.
In Rhode Island and looking for great food and a fun atmosphere, well, be sure to stop by Bonehead's Wing Bar, 131 Washington Street in West Warwick, with over 65 different wing sauces and dozens of sandwiches, burgers, and appetizers, and a fully stocked bar. Bonehead's has something for everyone. Bonehead's also shows every WWE and UFC pay-per-view, features live music, weekly trivia, and much, much more. So, be sure to stop in, tell Matt and the crew that Place to Be Nation sent you, and become a Bonehead today.
What's up, wrestling fans? This is Jeff Peck, and you can check out my wrestling podcast, The Still Real To Us Show, every Saturday right here at placetobenation.com. It is a wrestling podcast from a fan's perspective, and we're not doing it in our mom's basement. So check it out every Saturday right here at placetobenation.com.
It's still real to me, damn it!
Looking for new wrestling, sports, and pop culture voices? Head over to placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. We have an extremely talented staff that covers comics, video games, and all facets of entertainment. Our sports coverage spans all the major professional and collegiate sports, including MMA. Our fresh takes on professional wrestling are some of the best on the internet. Don't forget to check out our fantastic podcasts as well, including the voice of Ring of Honor, Kevin Kelly, exclusively at PlaceTVNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. Also, be sure to check out our friends at the History of WWE.com, ProWrestlingOnly.com, Scott Keith blog at rspwfaq.net, and piledriverwrestling.net.
This is the King of Old School, Steve Carino, the true voice of Ring of Honor, and you're listening to the Place to Be podcast.
All right, Nation, we are back reviewing Unforgiven 2002. We're going to dive right back into the show here, Scott, because we had right backstage with an actor from The Young and the Restless. Did you catch this gentleman's name? Some old
his
guy.
His name is, I had it at the tip of my tongue. His TV name was Victor Newman from
Newman,
The Young and the Restless. His stage name, and I used to have it on the tip of my tongue, his stage name is Eric Braden.
Okay.
Eric Braden is the actor's name, and he was his character's name is Victor Newman.
All right. Well, D'Lo Brown and Kidman are backstage reacting to Ric Flair turning, very upset about this. And Victor Newman walks in and picks up Dawn Marie. But he's like mumbling. You could barely hear what he's saying. And D'Lo's complimenting him like he knows who he's even talking to.
Yes.
It's just random and pointless. I know they were probably trying to put over there in L.A., but this is literally like an F-level actor that they have out there.
Yeah.
And this is who they're showing off in L.A. But just an awkward, awkward segment. It made no sense. It was pointless. Like, oh, this old guy's suave. He picked up the slut Dawn Marie. That's really good. Makes a lot of sense.
I know. Yes, that she just finds some rich piece of meat and moves on. I mean, he is, for those, you know, for our female fans, he is an icon of the daytime soap genre. But clearly the people, the demographic of you, of who's watching the show are probably like, well, is this clown?
Well, it's kind of funny because, you know, wrestling is always a lot of soap opera tropes to it. So you think maybe there is a little bit of crossover, but just an odd, like no one really watching is going to know or care. So.
No, not at all. Not at all. So anyway, that was quite uncomfortable. You could tell it becomes a common theme, JR, and it sort of has been already, but it will continue over the rest of pay-per-view time. Faceless, nameless mid-card guys wear the pay-per-view t-shirts. There were a lot of them on this show. D'Lo had one on.
Yes.
Kidman had one on. Flair had one on. It's terrible. Okay. Next up, we have our next title match of the evening. The WWE Women's Championship is on the line. Your champion is Molly Holly, who has held the title since beating this girl at King of the Ring. Now she's getting her rematch back, and that is my PIC's own Trish Stratus.
Mm-hmm.
And this was the match. Now, after the really good... I talked earlier, JR, about Lawler and, you know, how he was... You know, he's gotten kind of annoying.
Yes.
He was really good in the Triple H match.
Yeah.
Being like back to his old school, like 97, 98, 99 heel.
Right.
And even in this match, yes, he does, you know, some puppy stuff.
Yeah, but it's not the puppy stuff that's annoying.
But I almost feel like, well, let me finish this point. At this point, I feel like somebody went in his ear and said, all right, King, they're actually good wrestlers. Will you fucking
No, because I don't feel like it was like that. I felt like they were still pushing the virgin stuff. And that was really annoying. I hated
that
storyline.
Right.
She's on the Virgin Islands. Like, it was just stupid. So, I mean, I don't give him a pass on the puppy stuff because then we're back to doing the virgin and the fat ass thing. Well, the fat ass thing hadn't really started, but the virginity thing is, even JR gets in on it. Back on pay-per-view for this feud again. Trish becoming really the main star of the division. Mm-hmm. More Molly virginity. Molly beats on Trish outside the ring with an aggressive attack, which has really been Molly's trademark during this whole run. Very aggressive. Trish gets a bulldog after... for the win after Molly had control the whole match. Trish found it, hung in and found an opening. Fine match. I thought it was smart to have Molly control it, and I thought Trish was ready for her next feud now. I think the Molly reign is done. I think we need to move on to something else. As much as I love Molly, I thought she was due for a little bit of a change as well.
Mm.
Trish was emotional. She's a good leader for the division, someone the fans could rally behind and really get into as its leader. So nothing match here. I think we can move on, but
yeah.
I think we're due for something new and meatier for these two.
Yeah, you're right. He at one point
I'll
does
tell
say,
you, King, she looks like she can really use some penis in her vagina. She's a virgin.
She does say, oh, but Trish is a good wrestler. He does sneak that in there. But yeah, I mean, it was a solid enough match, and Trish deserved the belt back. And this is, I think, the match where she officially starts her like 4-year run as the face of the division with this match here. All right. Next up, another combination of the SmackDown 6.
Walk me home tonight. All the stars will shine. As we continue on with the...
I'm going to send you Facebook messages until you learn to turn your ringer off.
Oh, so that was on purpose.
Well, no, it wasn't. But, well, the first one wasn't. The second one was.
You're such a Bischoff.
Try to prove a point.
Yes, I do have to do that. You're right.
My God, Molly's drunk, and that young man's taking her home.
My God, I didn't hear any words but friends alerts.
My God, I think this might be the Night King. Imagine them calling her the night she loses her virginity.
The night of the prom or something. My God, her panties don't look like Omar the Ten Baker did them.
My God, she's in the back of that Jeep with that young man.
You sound like Mr. Garrison on South Park now.
Now, come on, children.
Come on, Mr. Hand. On a side
My
note,
God, I... King, she's bending over. This could be it.
All right. So you're betrothed. 1/6
That young man going down on Molly Holly. He's got a crimson mask. She's a virgin, King. All right, I'm done.
Yeah, I don't think you really need to do anything further than a crimson mask. Morty, look at her underwear. It's so big.
Okay, all right, now you're getting creepy. All right.
All right. So, all right. So we rejuvenate JR, one of early 2001's best feuds.
Well, before that, actually, we go backstage again, Scott. The lesbians carousing with 3-minute warning Rico and Eric Bischoff, like his own personal
swing both ways.
Freaking goal club back there.
Where's Ewing when you need him? Oh, God, that's funny. All right. So we have this rejuvenating of a 2001 feud. From early in the year.
My God, Molly Holly's going home with J. Arsenio D'Amato.
Oh, God. He's going to tear her to shreds.
Call the cops.
Wait, he is the cops. So this all goes back to Rikishi stink-facing your boy. Benoit laughs at him. Then they somehow spin it around, and then Benoit's held back by Angle's. Angle holds him by his arms, and Rikishi stink-faces him.
Right.
And Benoit wants a match. And
well, they did the number one contender series to determine who would get the crock at Brock. Crack at Brock.
The crock.
Benoit and Angle lost their match to The Undertaker, upsetting both men. They would begin challenging each other to determine who the better wrestler was. On the 9/12 SmackDown, Angle interfered in Benoit's match with Rikishi. As you mentioned, he knocked Benoit off the top rope and laughed as Rikishi buried him in a stink face. Later that night, Benoit was embarrassed and demanded a match with Angle at Unforgiven. A week later, they lost a tag match to Billy and Chuck. Angle jumped Benoit and forced him to tap to the ankle lock. Angle would release the hold, but then quickly reapply. But Benoit countered and forced Angle to tap to the crossface. Emotions were high, determined to prove who was better in this WrestleMania 17 Backlash and Judgment Day 01 rematch. And Scott, this was brilliant by Paul Heyman. These two guys weren't really involved in the title feud. Hey, let's match them up and let them go out there and tear the house down. Feud was reignited, big part of the new SmackDown style. A lot of quick mat work to start. Benoit was gunning for the crossface. Intense feel to this, I felt, right off the bat. Storyline is clearly ankle lock versus crossface. The crowd is very into it and very appreciative, cheering at the reset points after they duel for a few minutes. Kurt kept dodging the crossface, takes over, works the midsection. Benoit, when he took over, would work the shoulder. They traded Germans in a crazy back-and-forth spot where they just kept alternating. Two guys that are mirror images of each other wrestling to a stalemate. Great Chris Benoit released German with Kurt landing on his stomach and face. I always love it, though, the way Kurt takes that move. Smoking hot closing sequence where they fight over the crossface with the reversals and twist into the ankle lock with a lot of back and forth. And these guys, the whole story of this is that they're dead even. They know each other so well, and they're both so good that it's hard for either guy to really find an advantage. Kurt would actually get a crossface and pushes the rope away with his foot, but Benoit rolled through and uses the ropes to win, as usual for these guys. I love that one of them always cheats to win because neither guy can win the match clean because they're dead even every time.
Yeah.
So one of them always has to find a way to cheat to win. Match of the year candidate easily and set SmackDown apart as a class of the WWE at this point because they can have matches like this on
paper. I don't know there's any doubt about it. I mean, backstage, Heyman's got to be glowing at what he's got in front of him, and this match proved it. It's awesome, JR, the familiarity that these two guys have. It's like reading a book. It's like, oh, I remember those three matches in 01. Well, it's kind of a hybrid of that. And it really was. Like every time, I think the coolest moment was that crossface, and then Kurt just grabs the ankle out of nowhere. I mean, that's awesome.
No, it was a great tremendous match. And yeah, I definitely loved the I just love it. I love how they're always at a dead even stalemate, and they always have to find a way to cheat somehow. So yeah, this, one of them could win. Now, this is like the third time someone's hooked the ropes to win the match. So.
Right, or grab tights or something.
Right,
something
It's always been something shady because they can't win straight up.
No, it's tremendous. Highly recommend this match. Obviously, you know, check obviously, for Benoit matches on WWE pay-per-views, they leave them on there, but they don't point them out to you. You know how, like, every match on the network, when you look at the little timeline, has a little dot to specify the beginning of a match. Well, they don't put those for the Benoit matches. They're not going to...
That dot's called a period!
Shadow McMahon! That's obviously they're not going to point out the Benoit match to you, but it is there. For those that have not investigated it on the network yet. So, great match. Chris Benoit, roll up, some ropes, some tights, and they get them in. Match is just under 14 minutes, and it's every second is worth it. And when they take it to the next level with everybody else the next month, it's just incredible. So, there you go. Well, now for the part of this pay-per-view that
it's awesome.
The whole global scope of things. Well, it could have been awesome. To me, it ended up being a colossal waste of time, but
we're
it could
here
have been awesome.
For hot lesbian action.
Woo!
Fink had an awesome introduction, accompanied by the lesbians.
That's still not as good as the Michael Cole, Sean Stasiak.
Really
lesbians!
King at his pervious peak at this point.
Oh, God, he's the worst here. He is like a dog in heat.
But I thought everything else was so over the top, I actually ended up laughing at a lot of it and found some of it to be pretty funny. L.A. standing for lesbian action was, I thought, a pretty funny line.
Mm-hmm.
Bischoff's sleaze heel act is just so dead on and perfect.
Yeah,
so his whole plan is to set up a menage a trois for Stephanie. I thought Steph was looking pretty good. She had the leather jacket and the short dress on.
She looked very nice.
Comes out, and she's playing it up, and JR calling out King is good, too. I feel like you should hate this, but they went so over the top with it, I just couldn't be mad. The lesbian strip and take off Steph's jacket. It was a pretty hot tease, really blue-balling the crowd that really wanted some lesbian action here. And they got so close, you actually thought it maybe could happen. Like, they were kind of getting to that point where, wow, they really going to go through with something like this? Bischoff instead...
Stephanie experimenting.
I know. Why not? So Bischoff brings out a fat chick instead, and that's where the segment just goes in the completely in the toilet. Kills the crowd with a switch. Stephanie kisses the fat woman vigorously, and then we get another revealment that is Rikishi and drag and blackface. Beats up Eric Bischoff, gives him a stink face, and they bring closure to the whole undercover subterfuge part of the angle. And we kind of move past this brand spying and attacking thing. Now we settle.
I can't
back
believe
in.
It is nobody thought Bischoff that fucking stupid.
I know, right?
He didn't know that was Rikishi.
The payoff's okay, but it could have been so much hotter. I mean, if they just had Stephanie do it and made out with the chicks, they would have made her such an over face.
Yeah, exactly.
And it would have backfired on Bischoff because he would have been like, oh, she liked it. Like, suck it up and make out with the woman, Steph, for the good of every man in the audience.
Come on.
It would have made her super over. The crowd would have been nuts. Instead, we get this whole shit with fat-ass Rikishi. I mean, come on. I'm sure Steph has experimented in her past. She seemed like a little bit of a wild child in college.
Exactly.
I'm sure she did something similar at a time. That's my guess, right?
BU, yeah.
Get a little hot and heated. I mean, who knows?
Yeah, you know, girls and co-ed and, you know, sororities. And
all right. This isn't the bang bus. Let's calm down.
What? I didn't say girls going wild. Ric Flair limos. Woo!
This is in the Bang Corolla. Where the hell you're driving nowadays?
the Bang Corolla. It's not the Flanavan.
Oh, God.
All right. Time now for our main event.
Sorry, I thought we were going down that road.
Well, we do get an appearance in 2003. The very last one. Oh, that's going to be very sad. Okay, our main event, the WWE Championship, or the blue title.
Here come the lesbians. By God, they're going to make Molly Holly a woman.
All right.
Break her in.
Shut up, McMahon. All right, so your champion, of course, is Brock Lesnar. Who's now specific to SmackDown. And your number one contender, former Undisputed Champion, lost it in July at Vengeance, don't think he ever actually got his match back, and that was The Undertaker.
He had earned the match by winning a number one contender series, picking up a pair of wins in consecutive weeks. Brock was set for a face-to-face interview with The Undertaker on the 9-5 SmackDown. After the two had slight back and forth about their respective legacies, Paul Heyman, not Hyman, interjected and began discussing Undertaker's home life. He claimed that Taker's focus would be divided because he now had to tend to his pregnant wife, Sarah. Taker warned Heyman to shut up, but Paul kept prodding. Paul capped off his taunts by telling Taker that after Brock took him out at Unforgiven, he'd be more than happy to look after his wife, but not the unborn child. It was a great Heyman line. Taker lost his cool and shoved Heyman, but Paul recovered and held Brock back from retaliating. The next week, Undertaker had a match with Matt Hardy. Paul Heyman showed up on the screen in Taker's locker room where his wife Sarah happened to be hanging out. Paul commented on how beautiful she was looking and then asked Sarah how she was planning to care for a newborn child when her husband would end up as an invalid daddy. Before any more could be said, Taker burst into the room, grabbed Paul by the throat, but that allowed Brock to come in and smash Taker in the head, leaving him lying. Brock would then place his hand on Sarah's stomach and say, "Life's a bitch." Great heel work. A week later, Heyman and Lesnar again avoided Taker by having a police corps cuff Lesnar and place him in protective custody. Now, I was more of a fan if they did this as more of a straight up match and sports build like we saw the previous month at SummerSlam. Mm-hmm. But Heyman and Brock were so good as heels that they actually make this nonsense work. Like, I didn't think we needed a pregnancy, all this shit. Like, you really didn't need that. No. But they were so smarmy and slimy about it. Heyman with the line about their unborn child and Brock putting his hand on the baby. Like, this, that was all so fucked up.
Yeah, it was.
So I thought, it worked. Right, yeah, that made it work. Mm-hmm. Internet legend, of course, has that Undertaker refused a job to Lesnar at the last minute, changing the finish to a schmoz. Another claim is that the double DQ finish was intended to build intrigue to a stipulation the following month. Either way, Taker earned a lot of heat from smart fans over the next few weeks for not laying down for Brock after both The Rock and Scott, we should mention, Hulk Hogan had done so in the last 6 weeks. Mm-hmm. Hulk Hogan had his final appearance in this run on SmackDown, where he lost a title match to Brock when Brock made him pass out in a bear hug. Hogan had bled, and Brock, of course, swiped the blood across his chest, and Hogan would be gone. And the story we'll get to in a couple months that he was set to come back later in the year, but we'll cover that, I believe, in November. So,
mm-hmm.
I like that story here. Brock trying to wipe out the old guard, become a new face and man on SmackDown. No respect for the legend. Wiped out Hogan, took out The Rock, now trying to take out Taker. I thought that was interesting. Mm-hmm. Blending of the family and Sarah stuff, not completely needed, but like we said, they made it work. But I think this would have been better as more pure sports build with the young guy trying to take out Taker who was trying to hang on. Heyman's such a good skis, though. Taker, new theme with lyrics, solidifying his face turn. You're Gonna Pay has now debuted.
Yes.
Tremendous yes. Theme song.
I liked it, yeah. I did, too.
I thought it was a good challenge for Brock on multiple levels. Not only trying to hang with Taker, but also kind of carrying him a little bit and being seen up on his level. He's wrestled a lot of guys that were, I don't want to say easy to work with, but that could hang with him. Now he's in there with someone a little bit older, so interesting to see. And a guy whose work rate hadn't really completely come around to the levels that it would later on. Story of Taker's vulnerability due to mind games. Taker was all over Brock with strikes, tries to out-wrestle him. Heyman helps swing the match. Brock attacks the ribs and back. A lot of groundwork. Map-based main event style starting to seep into the product now. A lot of wrestling instead of brawling.
Mm-hmm.
Taker bleeds. Solid enough heat segment. I didn't think anything that really stood out, but the crowd was really fired up for Taker's comeback. He gets a visual pin. And Scott, I want to ask you, is that the closest Brock has come to losing a match? Taker basically pinning him with the ref out?
Yeah, I don't think Rock didn't have that kind of faux pin at SummerSlam.
Yeah.
Obviously, the Hardys. Nah, yeah. I mean, in that aspect, they did try to make it like Taker came the closest.
Right.
And I don't believe the Taker wouldn't job to him.
Let's get to that one sec. Let's talk about the rest of the match because I want to get your take on that.
Okay. The match is very good. It's not great. It's a little choppy, but I think at the same time, Brock is dealing with a guy very different than anybody else. Taker has his own style. He did need to be carried a little bit. And, that doesn't, you're getting to that point now. He's been in the business 12 years.
Oh, yeah, it's fine. I thought it was just interesting because Brock hasn't really been in that spot yet.
Right.
We get interference from Matt Hardy continuing a new heel run that we'll talk about. leads to distraction, turn, and momentum, and then from there it degenerates into a completely overbooked mess. Taker uses a chair to beat the shit out of Brock. Get a lot of good near falls down the stretch. Brock survives a ton of offense and turns into a wild brawl with a shitty finish to set up the next month. The crowd was not happy at all. Taker stands tall at the end. Very similar to Ground Zero 97, if you remember.
Yes.
Where they would
good,
set up
great,
Bad
great
Blood.
Great analogy. Good call.
With the Shimazi finish in September to set up the Cell match in October. Mm-hmm. A lot of rumors again beforehand that Taker didn't want a job. So let me get your take on that. So you don't think those are legitimate? You think it really was just to set up the next?
Yes. Yeah, I do. I think it was meant to... I think it was definitely meant to set up the bigger rematch at No Mercy. I don't think what would Taker gain from acting that way? I mean, clearly the company was behind him. Taker's political career is not stellar. Chronic. So I think he was just like, I don't want this to be clean. Let's kind of make a mess out of it, and we can really set up something great for October. So
you think this
I don't
should have been last then?
Well, which match were you going to put last? You don't want to put I guess you could have put Triple H, RVD, but you really want that last? They were in a weird spot. Neither title match was going to be great.
Right.
So
should have closed with Benoit and Angle.
Yeah, really. You should have closed with the lesbians. they kind of had no choice here. I think they wanted to continue pushing Brock as like the new young face of the company. I think that's why that match was there. To give him a little shine. And Taker, obviously, credible. More than credible, of course. So that's why I think they put that match last. Taker RVD. Triple H RVD didn't have that juice. In fact, the one in October didn't have that much juice either. So I didn't have a big problem with it. I think it was to give Brock the extra shine to be the face of the company. And I believe that Taker, I don't think there was any political maneuvering there. I think the bookers were like, you know what, we'll end this in a shit show and set up for Little Rock in the cage, in the cell. So
yeah, I'd probably lean that way as well.
Yeah, I don't think there was any schmozzing going on. But a decent match, nothing great. I thought the last, how long was the match? It was over 20 minutes, 27. I would say the last 5 minutes were really good. I thought the first 15 were okay. But I thought the last 5 minutes, chair shots and, you know, Taker having power moves where he was like pushing Brock. And I don't think that was, I'm sure some people probably thinking, oh, you know, where does he get off getting to like throw Brock around?
Right.
Well, Taker was also 300 pounds. It's not like,
yeah, no, that's fine. I mean, I'm not saying that Taker should have jobbed in 5 minutes, but
right.
I mean, it's fine. Do the schmoz ending here. But I can just say I get why the crowd may have been a little frustrated to get that finish. Mm. But
Well, double DQs or any of that crap at the end of a main event sucks anyway, regardless of the situation.
So let me ask you this. A really good show on the verge of being a classic, I thought. There were like a few things clicking away from it being like an all-time show. Like Benoit Angle was a easy match of the year candidate. Mm-hmm. But I thought the main event, Triple H, RVD, Edge, Eddie, like they were all close. But they didn't get over that hump. And I thought to me that kind of hurt this from being a classic and made it kind of one of those shows of the solid undercard and a great one match show.
Mm-hmm.
Let me ask you this though.
Mm-hmm.
Was this the best LA crowd ever?
Let's look at the comparisons.
Well,
WrestleMania 7.
You want to lump in Southern California, LA/Anaheim?
Anaheim? I mean, it's the same county, it's the same demographic,
because
same.
I'm thinking, I guess, I mean, I said that, but yeah, WrestleMania 7, that crowd was really good, but that's
really
a different
good
era. I mean, that's everyone was hot.
I thought Lee Marshall pumped the crowd up at WrestleMania 2.
I have a hard time comparing any crowd of this era to anything pre like 93. I feel like 93 back, the crowds were always fantastic for these shows, like they were into everything all the time.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, we're a little snarkier now at this era of.
And it's better than any Anaheim crowd I've ever heard. I mean, I wanted to point out just how good they were in this. They really were.
I thought the 12 crowd wasn't bad. I thought the 16 crowd wasn't great. The first big time legit show in the City of Angels in over 11 years, and I think they were red hot and. Little do we realize the following month, JR, a much smaller market than LA gets an even better show.
Yep.
So we'll talk about that next week. I think this show could have been even better had there been a little more better execution of a couple of matches, if Triple H and RVD had that just that little extra something,
yeah,
that match might have delivered 3.5.
There's a lot of moments on this show that felt like that. But yeah, definitely. I mean, there's some highlights of the show, definitely, and it's not a waste by any means. There was nothing really bad on it.
No,
it just came up just a little bit short of being a classic outing. So. Right. There is your Unforgiven 02, Scott. Quickly, PlaceToBeNation.com. Check out Chad Campbell's Vintage Vault previewing. He did that opener. Andrew Reich has an awesome story up about the San Antonio Spurs and the concept and story of us versus Assembling Stars. This is the different way that they built their team in comparison to the Pistons teams of the mid-aughts. And a really good piece, as usual, from Andrew. You and Dan McGinn did the last two episodes of Legends House. Very emotional episodes. You guys did a great job recapping those.
Thank you.
Be sure to check that out. Also, check out the movies of the P2B generation up to 1980 now. We started in 1976. The staff members ranking the best movies of each individual year. So be sure to visit that. It's a tremendous series, and they're going all the way till 2014. So we got a ways to go. Be sure to check that out. New episode of The Kings of Sport was up. New episode of The Sports Lounge, WrestleNomics Radio with Chris Harrington looking at Black Thursday, all the firings last week. We had Ryan Everett's main event. We had the Still Real to Us podcast as well. Steven Sutton's Honor Report with a big pay-per-view coming next week for them. We had, as I mentioned, the Sports Lounge, the High Spot, looking at the releases, TNA's wish list, Daniel Bryan's dreams, and other top stories of the week with Glenn Butler and Steve Willie there. Russell Sellers, a very interesting article, Scott, on the rumors out there that Warner Brothers DC Comics film slate over the next few years. Comic book movie fans, check out that piece from Russell. He has all the pertinent news about what could be in the pipeline from Warner Brothers and DC. We had Scott Keith's rants on Clash of the Champions as well as NXT. New episode of the Steve Carino Show with Alice in Danger. And big news, Scott, this week, joining Steve Carino is Matt Hardy. So if you have any questions, get those in. It records tomorrow night, or you might be listening to this on Tuesday. It records Tuesday night. We'll be airing on Friday at PlaceToBeNation.com. Matt Hardy joining Steve Carino and Dan McGinn on episode 9 of the Steve Carino Show. New episode of The Bauer Show was up. New episode of Main Event with you and the... who'd you have? Oh, yeah, Graham Cawthon this week, right?
Yes, Graham, JD, Ben, and Reesh. Yes. Yep.
So good talk there. You talked about you broke down the whole NXT roster, which is really cool. And Scott, you were a busy bee last week. You were on the Pro Wrestling Super Show with Stephen Graham. Did the wrestler snapshot of Chris Jericho. Be sure to check that out. Roger Morissette had his new edition of Cowboy Goes to Class, looking at Clash of the Champions 1. Does he still hate Tully Blanchard? Tune in there to find out. Todd Gessling, we talked about the U.S. Men's National Team, the World Cup earlier tonight. He has an awesome in-depth preview, one of the best previews you'll find anywhere of the U.S. Men's National Team. So if you're getting swept up in Ring of Honor and in World Cup fever, be sure to check that out. I mentioned Ring of Honor because we also had a new episode of the Kevin Kelly Show. We had Bobby Fish on, and he was a tremendous interview as well. And Kevin and I did a lot about soccer, too. So check all that out and more, along with Jeremy Nichols' full report on 2014's E3 conference, too. So that is your Placement Nation update. If you want to write for us, hit us up at info@placementnation.com. You can follow us on facebook.com/PlaceToBeNation and at @PlaceNumber2BNation as well. All right, Scott, we are back Wednesday night. We have Scott Keith in the house for another mailbag episode. If you have questions, there is a thread up on the Place to Be podcast live chat page, or you can also email us. You can hit us up on our main Facebook page, at Twitter, however you want to do it. Send us your questions for me, you, and Scott Keith. And next week we are back with, I believe, No Mercy, right? We got No Mercy.
No Mercy 02 from Little Rock.
And then we'll have Kevin Kelly's show next week. We don't have a guest lined up yet, and we'll talk more about Main Event as we get closer as well. So for Scott, I am Justin. We'll talk to you Wednesday night. Keith will be in the house. Be ready for some mailbag fun. Until then, everyone take care. I'm going to go sniff some grass and try not to pass out.
Eat bread and dust.
Yes.
Ashes to ashes.
Brickles to dust. I shouldn't watch any more Goldust matches either.
Sneeze into the TV.
This is him all around. Dustin Rhodes. Dusty Rhodes. Oh, my God.
So many no more Rhodes. You sit and wait for the Rhodes
Imagine
family.
If he said that. Imagine if that was on the paperwork. Listen, you're allergic to dust. You can't watch Goldust matches anymore.
No more Dusty Rhodes promos. And you can't act out like Dusty Rhodes either.
Ugh, how am I going to clean all this dust? Get the Swiffer wipes.
Oh, Morty, she's got big underwear. Because I'm nice, smooth. Hot as a bone, since I pick up the microphone, I'm hotter than Brimstone. The razor.
sharp crossbow accurate and drop the multi-verbal milligram supplement. Plus and bent, be your logical word advanced. Been too legit to quit before the hammer pans. The heritage, the man converted words to some and stay blacker than the New York Harlem Renaissance.
No cough, we paint a darker picture in your sector. Perfect verbal architecture, sparking lectures, lyrics infectious. Fuck your Lexus. If you ain't giving God the praise, then it's useless. Like when MCs try to make hits and them shits flop. Running races like they was Penelope pit stop. Envelop the hits, rock bottom. The fish jock got him souped up, but his rhyme is beating his loops up.
Like da da, like da da. I can see clearly now, top of the pile with my style. Check the profile, it shifts like sundials, crisp like young smiles. We rip and run wild, intent to rock crowds, some bite like rock wilds. Your game is disconnected, misdirected, disrespected. When we come in, expect some next shit. The J-U-R-A, classic cool forte. Get low down and dirty like the Illmore Ray.
My heart pump the rhythm of the militant street light. Soldier with composure up under the street light. The pro style, prototype, professional, media light, shine bright. Now kill all the bullshit, cheap talk and lip service. Jealousy and envy and undertone curses in your verses are the purpose of a nigga living nervous, unsure and uncertain, but about the short circuit.
Hey, like da da,
like da da,
dee dee da da,
dee dee da da,
ba da da dee dee dee,
ba da da dee 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 da da,
ba ba.
Hey yo, my gift to gab should be sold in bags. Boost up the price tag, make a whack rapper mad. Rely on my right side, secure and I take tight. Takes the tangibles to your man, I'm on the clavicle. Easily, tuna me, cleverly swelling my treasury. Vocal pedigree for you critics who try to measure me. But leisurely, I'm about to run you down my resume. Had a bundle of struggle from birth to my present day.
Your love don't compute, perhaps you need a boost. A magical flute, some nose candy to toot. Before you get loose, express and tell the roof. You claim you got the juice, but you lame and out the loop.
So I associated myself with fossilized figures. Crack the summer sizzler, hit the real live niggas. My influence is gunshots and trauma units. Street trends with material world friends.
Like da da,
like da da,
dee 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 da da,
dee 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 da da,
ba da da dee dee dee,
ba da da dee 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 da da,
ba ba ba. Like da da,
like da da,
dee 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 da da,
dee 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 da da,
ba da da dee dee dee,
ba da da dee 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 da da,
ba ba ba.
Hey, I'm Sean Lennon, and you're listening to Jurassic 5!
Yo, you must have did see a pretty coffin where you like. Because if you test the champion, man, you're going to die tonight.